Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So many white guys.
So many.
So many white guys. So what?
How much whiteness? All over the place. God damn. So many white guys. So many white guys.
Welcome to So Many White Guys, baby. Live from WNYC Studios, I'm your host, Phoebe Robinson. And with me, as always, is my gal pal producer, Joni Mitch. What up, ho?
Ooh, gal pal. I love it. It's like we're like a buddy comedy.
I love that I called you a ho and you didn't even, like, blink.
I just like to stick to the positive. If somebody calls me a gal pal and a hoe in the same sentence, I'm going to remember gal pal.
But I spelled it the French way, so it's like you're a classy hoe.
Hoax. Hukes.
Hukes.
Well, Jeeves, what are you going to do on Valentine's Day?
Well, no braggies, but I'm hanging out with friend of Two Dope Queens and also friend of my life, Baron Vaughn, because he's starring in the reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Ooh, that sounds so fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm still, like, figuring it out. Probably something very low-key.
Okay, but Valentine's Day is, like, today.
I know, so... but dating is just, like, it's a bad scene in New York. Like,
yeah.
Okay, the last pickup line I got, I was at a Two Dope Queens show.
Ooh, nice.
And I ordered a drink.
Great.
And I was waiting for my drink to come, and I could feel this guy's eyes on me.
Ooh, that's hot.
Well, it wasn't.
Oh.
It was one of those things where I was like, please don't talk to me. I know you're going to talk to me.
He was lurking. Yeah.
He was lurking. Yeah. He was a lurker. And so I turned, and I should have turned the other way, but I turned towards him, which was my bad.
Yeah.
And he goes, I wish I could be as pretty as you are.
Hmm.
Like, what?
I mean, it is nice, but he could have just said, you're beautiful. Like, it was just a weird... low self-esteem / compliment. It's like, I don't need to be involved in your emotional journey. Like, I'm at Two Dope Queens.
Totally. What's, like, the worst pickup line you've ever gotten?
I don't know. This was, like, years ago when I was living in, I think, my first apartment post-call. And I lived, like, a block and a half away from the laundromat, so I was carrying my laundry. And this guy was like, I let you do my laundry. And I was like, who is that for? Like, what? I don't want to do, like, your, like, doo-doo streaked laundry. Because, you know, guys literally don't know how to wipe their asses. It's insane that we ever have sex with men because they can never do a clean wipe. And I don't understand. Because we all have parents. And women, clean wipes. Men, fucking... looks like a train track from, like, a Charlie Chaplin movie. It's just fucking...
Phoebe, wouldn't you say maybe he was reaching across the aisle?
Ooh!
Which brings us into our next segment.
Transition lenses, baby.
Across the aisle. Across the aisle. We may be different, but what do we have in common?
Oh, God, this country hurts, man. Tell me what we all can agree on, Phoebes.
Okay. Can we all agree that we love sleeping in?
Sleeping in is literally the best. It's the best.
Yeah. When you give the middle finger to your alarm, you're like, you know what? I'm sleeping till 11:47 a.m. today.
Yeah.
Deal with it, time.
Deal with it. And also, day, go on. See if I care. You know what I mean? I don't care. See if I give a shit that the day goes on around me.
Yeah.
I don't care.
It's also like you sleep in and then you wake up and you feel like Sandra Bullock at the end of Gravity.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how do my limbs work? Like, you rediscover your body in such a real way.
You become a baby.
Yeah.
And you look outside and you're like, yeah, again, middle finger. You're like, LOL.
Yeah. Like, you guys have errands. That's really funny.
It is. is really funny. Good one. That's really funny. Donald Trump must love sleeping in.
Yeah.
Even if he's like as uncomfortable with himself as he is.
Yeah.
He's like, sleeping in is the best. He's got to love sleeping in.
Yeah. No one's ever like, more sleep, I'll pass.
Yeah. No. RuPaul and Donald Trump equally love sleeping in.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, you guys, let's all just remember that even though we may think differently about certain issues, we all love to sleep.
Because we're all human.
Yeah.
We're all part of one race, and it's called the human race.
Yeah. So take that through the day with you. And if you're getting into a little tiff with someone you don't agree with on the internet, just be like, this person likes to sleep. I'm going to take it easy. I'm not going to call him a cunt.
Love you, Phoebe. See you later.
Bye. Love you.
Yeah, I feel like every great figure in history probably slept in at least once a week.
Oh, my God. Like, Oprah, you know she sleeps in.
Amelia Earhart, like, the day before her big trip was like, you know what? I'm going to do me today.
She probably shouldn't have slept in. She probably should have, like, prepared more, you know?
Oh, God.
How is it too soon to say that? I mean, honestly, maybe if she hadn't have slept in. I'm just kidding.
I'm still thankful for what you did, Amelia Earhart, wherever you are.
Me too.
But we gotta get to this Issa Rae interview, so let's get to the commercial and, like, get hot to trot. You know what I mean?
But I was really breaking shit down there for a second.
That's what your next book can be about. Let's go to commercial.
Okay, fine.
Carnegie Hall has welcomed a dizzying array of performers.
To have Andy Kaufman, Frank Zappa, and Birgit Nielsen and Horowitz on the same stage, it becomes this kaleidoscope of our history.
I'm Jessica Vosk. Join me for the new podcast, If This Hall Could Talk. It's all about our unique cultural history, as witnessed by one of New York's most beloved institutions, Carnegie Hall. Listen now, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back from the break, babies. The commercial break. That was really cool. You can use that, Skrillex. Anyway, today I'm talking to a visionary, an Oprah in the making, a sister from another mister. That's right. I'm talking about Miss Issa Rae. In case you don't know, and if you don't know, literally die in a fire.
Okay, that's a little harsh.
Just
that's
kidding.
That's a little strong. We don't want to alienate our listeners.
But also, like, they should know about her.
Then maybe you should say, if you don't know about her, you should check her out. Versus, if you don't know about her, you should die in a fire.
Okay, I'm going to try Joanna Solotaroff's way. In case you don't know about Issa Rae, you should, like, check it out.
See, that sounds so much better. So match.
Issa Rae is the creative force behind HBO's new hit series, Insecure. She writes it. She stars in it. She produces it. Basically, she's the brains behind the whole operation. She's Stanford educated. She's got a podcast. She's got her own production comp. Her book, Awkward Black Girl, is a New York Times bestseller and oh so funny. She has an amazing hair journey. There are too many things to say. I feel like I'm going on and on. So let's just get to the damn interview, shall we?
Ooh, fire.
Welcome to So Many White Guys.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I know you're under the weather right now. You have the flu.
I do have the flu, but I was like, I just gotta come.
So you are currently in the middle of the writer's room for season 2 of Insecure.
I am.
How is that going so far? Because the first season, I just have to say, was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun being in season 2. We brought on 2 new people and everybody just vibes well together. We all feel like friends. We bust each other's chops. And it's just like we get to share stories to make the bigger story at hand. But there's definitely, I'm feeling like the pressure of like, it has to be big. And it's like, we don't want to, it's still a story about the like minutia of being black at the end of the day. So just trying to balance those two things with the second season, knowing that we're going to have, like, you know, people are going to be curious and tuning into the first episode of the second season. Like, oh, what's the hype about? So I'm nervous, but I'm excited about what we're writing.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where you just have to kind of keep doing what works. Mm-hmm. There are things you've learned throughout the working on the first season where you're like, oh, I could do this differently. And then, you know, it'll be great. I'm like, not worried.
I take that faith.
Okay. So let's do a little background on you for the listeners. I mean, I'm sure they're obsessed with you and already know, but you moved around a lot as a kid. And I notice a lot when people move around, they tend to be like creators and performers, and maybe as a way to kind of connect with people. Like, do you feel that way too? Or does moving around not really affect you that much?
It did at first. For me, it was like an opportunity to start over. Mm-hmm. Like, if I sucked at one particular school, it was cool because I knew that 2 years later I would be at another school and I could reinvent myself. I love like reset buttons because it always feels like an opportunity to be someone new, to do what I didn't do in the past.
Yeah.
And I think that's what moving around a lot did for me. But it also made me like an introvert because it gets so exhausting, like talking to people over and over again and reintroducing yourself. Like that discomfort is definitely, it plays a huge part of my own work too.
And you moved because your dad's job, yeah?
I moved because, well, my dad had a hospital that failed in Senegal, and then we were just poor, so we had to keep moving. Like, we were renting houses. I really don't know. I just knew that it had to do with we just didn't have money.
Mm.
And I would move schools, too. But I should probably ask my mom, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What happened?
So how old were you when you moved to California? What was that like going from Senegal to Cali?
So I was born in L.A. and then we moved to Senegal because my dad thought we didn't have discipline. And he was like, you need to know what, like, the African experience is about. Mm. And then after that, spent like 5 years in Maryland and then moved back to Los Angeles when I was in the sixth grade. And that was fun. You know, it was, I was like watching Saved by the Bell. And for some reason, I thought that was set in like Los Angeles when it was really set in like Indiana or something.
Yeah.
Right? So I was like, oh my God, I'm about to have that Saved by the Bell experience. I'm about to have Hollywood dreams. Mm-hmm. And it just was not like that. You know, I grew up mostly around like white people.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yep. And then LA, I went to a predominantly black school, and it was just like white people making fun of me because I didn't, you know, they were like, you talk like us and you're not black and all this dumb stuff, and black kids too. And it was just like, oh, this is very strange because I'm black.
Yeah.
So what's the issue? And then I spent the rest of my, like, I left that school, went to a private school, and then tried to super black it up in the dumbest way possible, like turning in papers in Ebonics. And
did your teachers pick up on what you were doing, or?
I don't know. I mean, my mom definitely did. And she was like, girl, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. How did you internalize that? Because I kind of always, it kind of like messed me up a little bit.
It definitely messed me up because I was like forcing myself to be someone I wasn't. And I just was like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, after a while, to be like, oh, this doesn't happen. This is just the way that I talk, I guess. It's just a particular cadence that I have. And then I know that I started judging other people for like talking white too. It just made me so judgmental and dumb. And I had to ask myself like why it was such an issue and what that meant and what people were trying to say when they said that about me. Mm-hmm. And for me, what I took most offense to was that people thought that I didn't know I was black and that I didn't appreciate my own black culture. And so I found myself trying to overcompensate in a way that just didn't make sense. And so after a while I had to be like, okay, I talk white. That's just it. So what are we doing now? What is it? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. And so you went to Stanford, and what was that like?
It was great because it was the first time where I met like a whole bunch of other awkward black people. I was like, oh, this is like the land of awkward black people. This is crazy. And I didn't want to go there initially. I wanted to go to NYU.
Me too.
Where did you end up going?
They were like, your grades are trash. I was like a C student in high school because I didn't care. So I ended up going to Pratt Institute.
Were you a rebel in high school?
I used to watch a lot of TV and film. Like, my whole thing is, like, I wanted to work in film. That's all I cared about. I didn't care about my schoolwork. I was a nerd. I was a virgin. Like,
what?
No. Yeah, I know. And
you were a virgin and your grades were trash. Maybe.
I bet that's, like, what my parents thought every time they looked at me. They're like, we know you ain't fucking, so what are you doing?
That's amazing.
Yeah. So did you get into NYU and decide to stay in Cali, or?
My parents made me apply to Stanford, and then I went to the admit weekend, and that's when I fell in love. I was like, everybody's super down to earth. Nobody's like, oh, Stanford. You know, it was just, and there were so many black kids there that, you know, I just thought were cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you started doing film stuff there, like web stuff, yeah?
So they didn't have a film program until I was a senior. Mm. And so I was directing plays there, you know, producing and directing plays. And then my senior year, I rented a camera from the library and created my first web series.
That's so cool. And I'm asking this because I think there are a lot of, I know people see that, oh, web series is a way to get to that next step. But you, at this point, are basically have an empire. You do. Oh, you're like producing like all sorts of web series. You have your own TV show. You just got a development deal with HBO, and that's amazing where you can develop and hone other projects. So I want to ask you, like, how did you get to a place where you were like, I want to not only create stuff for myself, but be like a curator of other talent?
Just wanting to make a community that didn't necessarily exist in television. I think that's where it came about. Just like, oh, we can share the wealth because the more of us there are, the more we can get noticed together. And then that grew into like my own frustrations with television and how long it took and how, I want to say antiquated the model is. Like the pilot model is just so, especially the network pilot model is so, like, old and just outdated. And so I wanted to create a program, and we ended up doing it through an initiative called Color Creative, where we just create the pilots for young writers who are underrepresented, who have underrepresented voices, so that you can, like, just have the funds to make your work. You could have something to show for it, build an audience around it, and then have that weight behind you to be like, oh, I created something. Give me a chance. I'm dope.
Yeah. So now you have a production company. What's the day-to-day like of having that?
It's working with a team, thank goodness. If I didn't have a team, then I would not be able to sustain all of this. But it's just, for me, it comes with working with, like, equally ambitious people who are hungry, who each have a specific lane, which is super helpful, like a business lane and a production lane and a PR lane and a... you know, creative lane, like, it's just everybody has a specific job, and we all work together to make the best content possible. And that took years of just getting on the same page and honing that.
That's really, really cool. I want to get back to Insecure. Real quick, if you guys have not seen the season finale, pause this episode, go watch it, because the ending is controversial.
Ooh.
It's going to spark a lot of discussion. Okay, great. Spoiler alert over.
So they came back.
They came back. They, you guys, watched are back. It. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for telling your boss to go fuck himself to go on HBO Go.
You really have the power. Yeah. I saw the person go and stop the podcast and come back.
So in the season one finale, Issa and Lawrence are officially done. They're officially broken up.
They are done. But are they? Because are you really done when you break up with someone?
Yes.
You cut it all off.
No, I started back emailing my ex like a week ago.
But how long?
We were together for 4 years. I broke up with him August 2015.
And you just...
Well, because I felt horrible doing the breaking up. So I was like, I really beat myself up. Because I was like, he's a good guy. And he is. He's really smart. He's wonderful. He's talented. And he loved me. And I was like, I felt like a monster. Where I was like, why is this like not enough? And it just was, you know,
it just wasn't for you.
Yeah.
I think with Issa and Lawrence, she was not the best. Mm-hmm. But there was a history of like her standing by... him. And then she got tired and she was dishonest and she was cowardly. But she should have just, you know, at the end of the day, been like, I don't want to be with you anymore. She wasn't certain. But in his case, he was depressed. He was trying to be better, but it was almost too little too late. And it's like someone had to tell him to be better.
Yeah.
But if the roles were reversed, you know, if Issa were depressed on the couch, would the man be expected to sit there and wait for her to get her shit together?
Yeah.
And we're just not afforded those same luxuries.
Yeah, exactly. I really do want to talk about the idea of the good guy, because we've all dated a good guy, air quote. And I think a lot of times for women in general, but like women of color, there is this notion that like, if he like doesn't hit you and like tells you you're pretty, like does the bare minimum that makes a good guy.
I know.
You know what I mean? I think it's great that you're exploring that on the show, because I don't think that's explored enough. And I think a lot of times you see romantic comedy is just like, here's this dude who's like kind of generic, but like you should want to be with him because he's a good guy. And it's
girl,
like, but
you should be with the guy and see his potential and and stick with him through that. But God, no one would ever tell a guy that.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, it's just such a huge double standard in terms of, you know, guys are expected to, like, sow their wild oats and explore and never settle because they don't have to. And women are supposed to just, like, oh, he's here. Okay, I got to work. I'm going to stick with him through it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make it work. Oh, he cheats on me. It's okay. Like, even the mentality that, like, a loyal woman sticks with a man who puts her through the ringer and she still stands by him. Like that is like, especially in Black culture, it's like to be a loyal female, which is so disgusting, is one who stands by her man.
Yeah. And it was also, I don't know, it's just one of those things where it's like women are never valued on their potential.
Mm-hmm.
That is never seen as an attractive quality in a
not
mate.
At all.
So what was the reaction that you were getting on social media that episode? Did it run the gamut?
I mean, for the most part, it was incredible. Like, just in terms of the conversations that it was sparking. I know in my own friends' lives, like, we caused issues in friends' relationships. And I was like, guys, you know this is fake. Like, what are you doing? Why are you affected by this?
Yeah.
And then, you know, people were coming at me who think that this story is real.
Yeah.
But it was like, y'all are watching, which is great.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think 2 days after the finale aired, I remember being on Twitter just in the morning, waking up, scrolling to see news, and I just saw, like, Issa and Lawrence, independent of, like, the hashtag me searching, but just people having conversations about it. And I was just like, this is incredible. People are still talking about this. It's really hitting home for some people.
Mm-hmm. And so I know you talked about this in other interviews that you kind of want to do a storyline where the woman decides to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you feel that was important? Was it just to kind of balance it? Because you always see like the guy deciding to cheat. Was it about that? Or was it just like you wanted to explore a different kind of way of a relationship falling apart?
Yeah, I just wanted to be inside a woman's head who decides to cheat. I've seen in past relationships, I've, you know, wandered, I've strayed. And I remember having a conversation about that with some of my guy friends, and they were just like, any woman who cheats is a whore. Like, that's the worst thing a woman could ever do. And I just remember being like, but nigga, you, you have like 4 baby mamas. What are you doing? So just the double standard there. And then even in watching movies about women cheating, like Unfaithful, somebody literally has to die after because the woman cheated. What's another movie where someone cheated? But it's always like just, it's always seen as the worst situation that can come about.
Right.
And I just wanted to see in a normal relationship how it played out. And just the perception of women cheating is just, it's not unheard of, but it's not, you can't be it. You can't come back from that. Like, I remember talking to a Hollywood executive, I talked about that, where a woman cheated in my story, and they were like, well, she can't be the hero anymore. No one's going to watch the movie after that.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, there are tons of movies where guys cheat and the women take them back and they live happily ever after.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. So I want to stay on the social media thing for a second because I follow you on Instagram. And you got to meet President Obama.
Oh, yeah. That was insane.
And he told you that he loves your show.
He did.
What the fuck is that like? That's insane.
It was absolutely insane. I was there with my mom.
Cute.
And she was hype.
Yeah.
It was very, very cold.
What if she was like over it? She's like, boring.
She's like, girl, why are we here? Yeah. What is the point? She was not over it, bless her heart. And we were just excited to see, you mm-hmm. know. We were excited to touch the walls. We were excited to talk to Secret Service. It was just
That's
hype.
So cool.
So she got to the front of the line. I don't know whatever how she made it to the very front.
Yeah.
But I was over there. Yvonne came with me from the show, Yvonne Orgy, and Levy was there. We were all in like a hype black girl group. And so when he came out after giving a speech, he, you know, started shaking people's hands. And I was like, okay, my mom's good, cool. I started filming her. And then I was like, okay, let me just, I kind of want to text him too. So let me go to the corner and see if I can at least reach out to him and have him text me. He sees me and Yvonne, and then he points to Yvonne and he's like, she's having a good year, huh? And I was like, he's talking about me? And then he just starts holding our hands for two minutes, talking about how he loves to see black women being creative and he loves our soundtrack and he can't quote it because, you know, he's president. So hopefully he can quote the show now that he's out of office. We miss you.
Yeah, we miss you, Barack.
So much. How do you feel?
I'm kind of like, oh, this is like not a dream.
I know.
He's probably so relieved, I think, because they went through so much from the media, from the government, that I think they missed it. But I think they're probably like, that was a lot to put up with.
Do you think Michelle misses it at all?
I think probably not.
I feel like every single time I look at her, I feel like I get her. Mm-hmm. Like, girl, you hate this.
Yeah.
You're so mad. You see through all the bullshit and you're so upset.
It's crazy. But it's so awesome that he is a fan of your work. And like, did you ever think when you were doing this show that it was going to resonate so much with people? Because I think your character being awkward and like doubting herself, I think is a very common experience, but it's not seen in people of color.
Right.
And I think that it just, when the show popped, like everyone was like, oh, I see myself in her. Like, so were you expecting that from the general public, let alone the president?
No, I definitely did not expect it in any way, shape, or form. And it was just, you know, I make a lot of the work for like my friends and family to laugh. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just it at the end of the day. Like, I'll be like, oh, will my sister find this funny? Will my best friend find this funny? You know, a bunch of black girls are relating to it, despite the fact that I say, which is really frustrating, when any black girl creates something, as I'm sure you know, we always have the burden of like, this is for all black girls.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't live up to every black girl's experience, then you're put under a microscope to say what you did wrong and how you didn't represent this black girl's experience and this black girl's. And so I always set out to tell a very specific story, and to have so many people still relate is just such a blessing.
Yeah. One of my favorite aspects of the show is your relationship, Issa's, with Molly. And I think that's great. I think these are actual real women.
Right.
And their friendship is genuine and authentic, and it is about supporting each other, not being competitive. And so I wanted to know, what was the process like in terms of developing that relationship and also working with Yvonne?
It just came into tapping my own friendships, my own personal friendships. And it's funny, in the initial version of the pilot, Molly, you know, was definitely a part of the story, but it wasn't, you know, about Issa and Molly. And they loved the character so much, they were like, we got to see more of this. And I was like, yes, great. But that, you know, comes to Molly is based off of a best friend of mine. And then, you know, taking qualities from my other friends.
Yeah, I really love their dynamic, because they call each other out in their crap, which I think a lot of friends do.
You have to.
Yeah. So on the show, the N-word gets used a decent amount, which, to me, I like never really like note. I think because you just hear it like said from guys a lot, so you're just kind of like, oh, whatever. And then when you hear women saying it, you're kind of like, oh, like I would do that. I'd be like, oh, that's new. And I'm like, no, it's not. But I don't know. There's just something to it where I just thought it was an interesting choice for your characters to use that as a way of communicating with each other. And what did you think about that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. When I moved to LA, I remember, I mean, in high school, the first time someone called me bitch in a friendly way, but I didn't know. I was just like, oh, man, this girl called me a bitch and I got to fight her. And I don't know how to fight. God, what am I supposed to do? And I was like, oh, that's how people talk here. Like, this is how people talk. And in you know, Compton. I went to the high school Compton and Watts on the border, and that was just how we spoke. And then even going into college, that's how my friends and I talk. They're just terms of endearment. And you're right in that it is typically associated with, like, guys. Guys mm-hmm. use those words all the time, and it's just like, oh, that's part of it. Like, they're rappers or they're comedians, yeah. and that's how they talk. It's funny, and that when women use it, it's just kind of, like, unladylike and a bit jarring. Mm-hmm. So I never did it to make a statement. It's just how I actually talk with my friends.
Yeah. This show is so much about regular Black people, which I really enjoy because I do, even in film, like the Oscar nominated films with people of color tend to be like extraordinarily accomplished people of color. And you made a mission statement that you just want to show regular lives of Black people, mm-hmm. which I think is amazing. And can you talk a little bit about like what inspired you to do that?
Just like you said, just seeing people who are super magic or super, like, sometimes just, they're so extravagant that they're emotionless. They're not like real people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know any Black people like that, like that are just like super strong all the time and who don't have feelings or who are just on the opposite end, like overly dramatic and just overly sensitive and over, like just boggled down by mm-hmm. race. And I was like, where's the middle ground? Like, yeah. where are the people who are just like my homegirl, like my mom, and wanting to see more of that and realizing that we haven't seen those kind of depictions since the 90s, since 90s shows.
Yeah. So your star is rising. You were nominated for a Golden Globe. Like, everyone's really in love with your show. Do you feel like there is this sort of pressure now for you to be, are you considered like extraordinary, and do you feel that sort of weight, or does life pretty much stay the same for you?
Stays the exact same.
That's
not
good.
At all. Like, I don't, I think it helps just feeling out of place. Mm-hmm. Cause I do, like, even being at the Golden Globes was just like, what am I doing here?
What is
you real.
Looked great though.
Thank you. But it's just, I just feel like I don't belong, which is commonplace. I mean, I don't, I'm like, okay, this is just, I guess, who I am at the end of the day. Like, no matter how confident I become in my work down the line, there's still going to be that, like, that insecurity that rocks me and makes me want to belong at the end of the day. I'm like, okay, now I have to prove myself when I get to come back.
Yeah. And so I want to talk about the show a little bit more. There's a really female-heavy powerhouse. Melina Matsoukas?
Yes.
Great. She directed half the season. A lot of people probably know her best from Beyoncé Formation video.
Hey.
So what made you pick someone who normally only does, like, a video direction? Because I think the show looks really amazing. It has a really cool look.
I was always a fan of her work. Mm-hmm. We were looking for someone who would obviously elevate it, mm-hmm. And we wanted to not take a chance, but just give another Black woman a chance, mm-hmm. one, and HBO is great about, like, hey, take a risk, and a lot of times risks suck and don't work out, but a lot of times they do.
Yeah.
And so I pitched her, and she just got it, you know, after meeting with a bunch of other directors who were great. She just spoke the same language in a way that excited us, mm-hmm. and was very humble about the fact that she didn't know television, but was such a studier of the craft, and just super open. And when you vibe with someone, like, that's the blessing of also working on this show, is that, like, everybody, like, really vibes, and we're all, like, no egos are involved. It's just, like, trying to make the best show possible.
Yeah, I like that. And another thing I like about this show is music. Like, Solange was, like, the music supervisor.
Yes.
And, like, your character, both on the show and the web series, Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, did raps into the mirror. So, like, I'm wondering, why does music play such an important place in your work? Like, what about it, like, resonates with you?
Have you ever just, like, you're driving, you hear a song, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh my God, I remember when this song has a specific connection for me. Like, this was my first kiss, or this is when I was mad at, you know, my significant other. Mm-hmm. And creating moments like that via the music for me are so crucial. And in trying to make a show that is relatable, I wanted the music to tell the story as well, so that, mm-hmm. like, when you're hearing a song, that particular scene has more weight for you because of the song, because the song is also telling you how to feel and telling you why this moment is important. And I just love that about music. And where the rapping is concerned, you know, just as a device, it's the only time the lead character is completely honest with herself and does that, you know, through ridiculous rap songs that, you know, are terrible. But that's her way of expressing herself. It's that mirror where you're only, where you're facing yourself and you have no choice but to just, like, look and acknowledge, like, what your issues are.
Did you ever, like, play an instrument in real life or sing or anything? Like, or no?
I took piano lessons for a long time. Nice. And I wasn't the best, but my mom made me take them. But, no, I wish I had a musical talent. I wish I had...
Me too.
Did you play anything?
I play the triangle. That's all they would like.
Why do you even tell people that you did that? That does not count.
It was middle school. I stand in my truth. I play the triangle.
Did you sign up for that? Did you? Are you kidding?
No, I think it was like legit, like, okay, this bitch is tone deaf and she can't play like the clarinet. Here's a triangle. You can't fuck that up.
I cannot. I would not tell anybody, but good for you, girl. Do you still, if someone gave you a triangle right now, would you be able to, like,
I mean,
pop off?
I might be able to get back into do like Carol the Bells. I might fucking kill it. I don't know.
I discovered the tambourine in my adult life.
Oh, nice.
That is the best instrument in the entire world to me. Like, it is, you're literally a party.
Yeah.
When you walk in with a tambourine, it is like, you're the life of the party.
So how did you discover the tambourine? Like, what happened?
I went to a karaoke night in Koreatown with some of the writers, mm-hmm. and they had a tambourine that you could, like, rent while doing karaoke, and I was drunk and fell in love with it. It made every song better because I actually hate karaoke.
What?
I know. Okay, let's...
Okay, bye.
Let's move past this.
No, wait, why do you hate karaoke?
It's just like... Did you call it karaoke? No, yeah. I hate even more. Thank you. I didn't think I could hate it.
I was trying to sneak that in.
I abhor it now. Thank you. I hate karaoke because it's in the same vein as like a cappella. It's just people who aren't that greatest thing. It's like if I'm watching singing, I want to be entertained. I want to be like, oh, that's good. Not like, oh, I can do that. So it's just not entertaining.
Yeah. Okay. So like we don't agree on karaoke.
We don't.
But that's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is a safe space. Okay. So we've got to get out of here. But I want to ask you, like, what does the future hold for you and what are you looking to accomplish that you haven't yet?
Ultimately, at the end of the day, I want to have a studio. I want to do what Oprah did, but for, like, you know, entertainment. Oprah's career is just amazing.
Yeah.
Also, now, just given the climate, I want to figure out, like, how I can use my platform to contribute politically and to make a difference in that way, because we're just in such scary, crazy, dumb times.
Yeah, how do you feel about all that stuff right now?
You know what I think? As millennials, I just feel like this is our... We've always known that racism exists, but it's always just been, like, in the background. I've had the mentality that, like, anybody who thinks this way is in the minority and they're dumb. Like, everybody's laughing at them.
Yeah.
And to see that not only is that not true, but that this is, it's just out in the open and commonplace. Like, I think that's what shook us all to the core. Mm-hmm. And it's hurtful. You know, you have older generations who are like, we knew this existed. This is our first, like, real, I mean, the evidence of it is just laid out. And so it's hurtful, but it's just like, how do we make them feel stupid again? How do we make sure that those people not only die off, but the mentalities die off? It just feels like we have to overpower them. But for me, it's just frustrating because I'm trying to figure out how best to use the platform to make a difference in that way and to shut it down.
Yeah. Well, I think you've been doing a great job, and I see you speaking out about stuff on social media, which I think is always great, because if you have the platform, it doesn't hurt to just say, like, hey, guys, pay attention to this. So I think that's That's great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you too.
Thanks. And thanks for being here and rallying through your flu.
Oh, man.
You fucking crushed it.
Sorry I sound disgusting, guys.
No, you sound sensual. You sound like Demi Moore.
Demi Moore?
Yeah.
Demi Moore is bomb.
Yeah, she's dope.
So thank you for that.
Of course. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Dom Daniel. Love was in the air for that interview. That was Black Girl Magic on Valentine's Day on Fleek. I mean, sometimes that's what you need.
I mean, it was so, so good.
Thanks, Joan.
Thieves.
Uh-huh.
Will you be my Valentine?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I shouldn't mix work with personal.
I just have someone else.
No, it's fine. It was me. It's fine.
It's not that I wouldn't ever, just like not this year.
I guess it'll just be an edible arrangement for one this year.
Oh, Joe, you know what? I can share.
No.
Nope, you're my Valentine tonight.
Okay.
So that means you gotta put out.
Ooh!
The So Many White Guys team includes Rachel Neal, Jana Solitaroff, Jen Poyant, Paula Schumann, Isaac Jones, Jeremy Bloom, and Joe Plord. Our theme music was written by a white dude and sung by a bunch of other white dudes. Check out photos of me and Issa Rae from our interview on the WNYC Studios Facebook page. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dope Queen Thieves. Also, exciting news, guys. If you are in the Massachusetts area, I will be there on April 1st performing in the High Mud Comedy Festival. It's a 2-day laugh fest featuring a bunch of people like Aparna Nancharla, Jordan Carlos, Dave Hill, but I'm performing April 1st that evening. So go to massmocha.org, get your tickets now before it sells out. It's going to be amazing. Please, I want to see you there. It'll be cute. We'll, like, eat some popcorn and, like, have some fun. Okay. YQYE.
Baby, I on ya. No, no.
Drunk in love. We be all night. Welcome back from the break, babies. The commercial break. Oh, wait, sorry. I totally skipped your line.
I was like, I'll wait for her to stop singing and then I'll jump in.
We be up all